This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
All right, let's start by acknowledging the recent election and the hopeful changes that will come with it. Our personal thanks are that seemingly mean people like Bill Frist and Rick Santorum lost on Tuesday. Slightly over 50% of Virginians decided to look at a new senator as well. So congratulations to Jim Webb. But I do feel the need to turn the music down on the celebration party. Yes, Democrats now have a handy lead in the House, and hopefully this will allow oversight that hasn't been around for years. But when people say that Democrats also won the Senate, I just want to point out a few things. Jim Webb's background is a Marine once working for Ronald Reagan, hardly the background of a typical Democrat. He's just more moderate than the incredibly conservative George Allen. And Joe Lieberman is now an independent because his own Democratic Party felt that over the past year or two, he wasn't liberal enough. Things will be different and hopefully better with the election, letting everyone know we no longer want to be led by a small percentage of the shelf righteous. Be satisfied for moderacy at the moment. For another quick topic, I realize I'm no genius, at least not anymore, but Saturday I was brainy enough to wonder why the university and its John Paul Jones Arena think their lies won't be noticed. Let me explain. Saturday morning at 10 a.m., tickets for the Red Hot Chili Peppers show at John Paul Jones Arena were to go on sale. I plopped down at my computer, signed into the JPJ website, and waited for 10 a.m. When time arrived, I was ready and did my thing. Somehow, some way, by 10:02, there were no more lower-level seats available. Okay, I was disappointed and curious as to how that could happen, but that was reality. I took a few moments to check out my other options, and then by 10:07, I Googled around using John Paul Jones and Red Hot Chili Peppers. And imagine my frustration when there were multiple ticket brokers claiming to have these concert tickets. One broker had 51 tickets overall, 35 of them being in the lower section that I had just tried to buy. I don't have a problem with tickets being scalped. That's just the economy sorting itself out. But I do have a problem with UVA and its arena for claiming that tickets won't go on sale until a certain time and that they have security methods to prevent real fans from being blocked out from the best tickets. With the most popular shows so far, their methods are no better than anyone else's. I guess profit comes well before integrity. All right, I feel better. I got that out of my system. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope that you're ready for a very interesting and educational show. We've got two really cool guys with interesting topic here as we talk about Darfur. But let me thank businesses like Blue Ridge Graphics for being here with us today. Blue Ridge Graphics can be found at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. That number can be found in the Charlottesville Yellow Pages and at BlueRidgeGraphics.com. And I should say that I don't know that Blue Ridge Graphics has anything, any feelings about what I'm whining about here to start the show, but nonetheless, they're still kind enough to back us. All right, today the topic is Darfur. Let me bunch all the right buttons here and see how we're doing. See who's on which. I have Muhammad Yahya. Is that the proper pronunciation? How
yes.
are you today?
I'm doing fine, sir. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, I appreciate yes. you coming now. Muhammad is the founder and president of the Demanga Coalition for Democracy and Peace in Darfur.
Demanga Coalition for Freedom and Democracy in Darfur. Yes.
I appreciate you being here. You are a true Sudanese individual, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I was born in Darfur, which is one of the states of Sudan. Yes.
And how long have you been here in the United States?
I have been here since June 2002. Right. Yes, almost 4 years right now.
All right. We also have Hai Martin. Hai is a member of the Students Taking Action Now, the Darfur UVA chapter. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. I appreciate you guys coming on. I think this is a very interesting topic today. We're certainly going to be a little educational for those like me who know this and that, but not how to put it all together. Write down the phone number, folks, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I'm sure that there will be a few questions out there to ease and help with the knowledge and to make a few comments. But let's start. Muhammad and Hai, what are these groups... what are the goals for them? Muhammad, why don't you go first?
Yes. Thank you, sir, for this very interesting question. We are really came together as STAN Group, which is a high-represented STAN Group, Students Taking Action for Darfur in UVA here, and the community. Also, we have Mrs. Maggie Murphy, who is also really working with us, representing the community and others together. And I am representing Darfurians through Demanga Coalition for Freedom and Democracy. We all came together for one goal, that we are trying to raise awareness and to get people aware here, especially in Charlottesville, about the issue of Darfur, because so many of people, they don't know where is Darfur and what is going on in Darfur. And this is a kind of duty or responsibility to tell and educate the people about the tragedy of Darfur going on right now.
Muhammad, do you live in Charlottesville? Where do you live?
Yes, I live here in Charlottesville. Since I came, I get asylum through United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and the government of the United States also provide me the help and protection to be here. Yes.
Okay. Hi, you're a member of, I guess it's Stand.
Yes, that's right. Students Taking Action Now, Darfur.
Okay. I can understand why Muhammad wants to become involved and create a chapter, et cetera. His home country is having a difficult time, thousands of people dead and being run out of their homes. Why does a white college student care? And I understand it's one thing to be there and say, ooh, that's bad. We should be doing something about that. But why factor that into your time period of someone who's trying to go to school, who's trying to get your work done, and all the other things that are going on at someone who's, what, 21, 22?
20, actually. As a college student, or as anyone that isn't personally connected to the Darfur situation, that doesn't bar you from being involved or having some faculty of sympathy with the Darfuris and their strife. And I think that's exactly what the UVA Stand chapter hopes to do, is get people involved with providing international awareness and aid to the Darfuris. Obviously, it's a tragedy, and a lot of human strife is going on there. And I think that's something that every human has a right to address and has an obligation to address. And I think that's really what we're trying to shoot for when we organize the Stand Group at UVA.
Muhammad, where does the name come from, Damanga Coalition, etc.?
Oh, Damanga Coalition, the name of Damanga itself, it is a symbol of a big and huge pot made by women, build it up mud after mud and layer after layer for 2 weeks, and then make it Damanga to store food on it.
So it's a pot made with
a
mud.
Big pot, yes, made by mud and dry grasses together, and use water, like just buildings that we built here, but build it a big pot, you know. And this pot, after they get done, they have to leave it under the sun to get dry for more 2 weeks. And then they lay it down and roll it carefully so as not to broken, and get it into the hut. Because normally people live in huts over there, you know, like makeshifts. Or sometimes when it gets very heavy, we have to build a hut on top of it. You know, it is very interesting and it's amazing. And this made by women. And Damanga is a symbolic for all Darfurians and most of the rural areas in even south of Sudan and even in Nuba Mountain. But in Darfur, it's very well known as Damanga, and used to store maize and durum and sesame and corns, and even sometimes some of valuable things like gold or money.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because I found that to be an interesting name to put in the title of the organization.
Exactly, exactly. And we have chosen this name because it is really considered one of the symbolic things and preserving the lives of human beings, because it is keeping the food for a long time, for in the time of famine and drought, and when people are facing, you know, kind of starvation, they come back to Damanga. When they have nothing to eat, they come back to Damanga and use the food. And this Damanga, unfortunately, destroyed. The first thing destroyed when those Janjaweed and the government troops attacked the villages, they destroy the food store, so as people, when they flee, those are able to flee, when they get back, they will get nothing. And this is one of the tactics. They destroy Damanga. And Damanga, when you destroy Damanga, you are destroying the lives of those human beings who are totally related on their food storage. And that's why we have chosen Damanga to become a symbolic name for our organization, because also we are preserving the lives of the people and human beings in Darfur.
11:13 here on WNRN's Wake Up Call. We have Mohammed Yahya from the Damanga Coalition. Hi, Martin, from the Students Taking Action Now. As we talk about Darfur and the needed attention over there, who wants to take on the topic of sort of let's take a little bit of time here and talk about how we got to where we are now in Darfur? Because I think for the average person, and I always like to consider myself trying to be the average person here hosting the show, is you see the headlines in the newspapers, you see the minute and a half on TV, and so we're aware that there is or we're led to believe that there's a lot of people being taken away from their homes, no food or a little bit of food for them, and a lot of death. But how did you get to this position?
Well, I think that's a little complex, you know, with any situation such as a genocide in a country that's been in instability for a while. We can start from Sudan gaining its independence in 1956. There was instability with the Khartoum regime being there, and a lot of resources being centralized right away. Darfur is in the west of Sudan, so they faced famine and strife earlier on.
Darfur is a region in Sudan.
It is.
Because I think for a lot of people, what's discussed is almost though it's its own country or...
Yeah. Yeah, you do get a lot of this. Darfur is actually the westernmost region of Sudan, on the Chadian border, the border with Chad. And a lot of the refugees that leave Sudan, leave Darfur because of the genocide going on, flood into Chad because of the geographic location. More recently, in the conflict, there was a conflict between North and South Sudan, more of a civil war type, if I'm correct.
That's right.
And that was the initial conflict going on, and that started to subside around 2002 or 2003, and this is when the Darfur conflict started to really develop on its own, separate from the civil war situation. The Janjaweed, who are an Arab-sponsored militia from the Khartoum government. When I speak about Khartoum, I mean the capital of capital of Sudan.
Yeah, that was pretty close to Khartoum.
Yes, yes, that's Khartoum, with an M on the end. The Khartoum sponsors the Janjaweed, an Arab-sponsored militia that come into villages in Darfur and commit raids. There's raids by horseback, raids even by air, airstrikes on the villages.
Is this an ethnic battle, a religious battle, a political battle?
Somewhat. I think that it's a very complex situation. You can't nail it down to one specific group fighting another, because there has been a lot of faction groups. There have been a lot of split-offs. And actually, interesting enough, I believe that the majority of people in Sudan are of Islamic descent.
Yes, Muslims, yes. The majority are
Muslims. Muslims, as well as the Muslims being who control Khartoum and are the Janjaweed as well. So one could infer that it may not be a religious conflict because of all the groups being of the same religion. As far as regional conflict goes, there is a lot there. People coming in and destroying the villages. There's also the African contingent, which Muhammad may be able to speak to.
Yes, just I can add something here. It is really complex, as you said. The people of Sudan in general, you can say about 75% of those are Muslims, and about 25% are 20% are non-Muslims, which is mainly in south of Sudan, who are also black Africans, Christians, and the war really took a long time over there until just last year, and we get the comprehensive peace agreement. Darfurians are 100% Muslims, but not Arab Muslims. They are African Muslims, you see. That's why the government of Sudan claims that they are Arabs, pure Arabs and Muslims, and they start killing those who are Muslims and black. It is not an issue of just religion. It is an issue of racism. In the same time, when they started killing those black Christians in south of Sudan, they declared the issue of Islam, the issue of jihad, and the issue of infidels. Those are kuffar, and we have to kill them and wipe them out because they are against Arabs and against Islam. And they use Darfurians as the Muslims to go to kill their own brothers who are black Christians.
Yeah, that,
you see?
That's, you know, again, I continually show my ignorance, but, you know, that's not the first Sunday for that. Sudan is an African nation, correct?
Exactly.
But what I'm hearing is that the African nation is killing the black Africans in their own country.
That's right.
Is that correct?
That's correct. When you see Sudan, you will never be able to make any distinguishes between people. Where is black, where is white? They are all almost black. Even those who are claims are Arabs, those Janjaweed, and those government members, al-Bashir and his fellows, they are black. You can't make any distinguishes between us. You know, we believe that we are Sudanese. We know some of Arabs here, but they get changed because they came and get married, you know, for 100 of years, maybe 500, 600 of years when Arabs came to Sudan, and they get changed right now. We have a new generation, you know, and Sudanese, black Sudanese. We will never consider this Arab and non-Arabs. But they trying to take an advantage of the whole country, and they trying to make it an Arab country. That is why they get a membership of the organization of Arab Leagues, which is representing all the Arabs. The government of Sudan get into this organization and become a member of the Arab Leagues, and they trying to change the situation in Sudan to make it an Arab country. And they will never make it unless they have to get rid of those black Christians in South and to get rid of those Darfurians who are black Muslims in Darfur and to get their lands and to change it and to make it an Arab country.
Are there other Arab countries in Africa?
Yes. In the north of Africa, we have Egypt, which is considered itself.
I guess Egypt is in Africa.
It is not. Yes, it is in Africa, in the north of
I'm
Africa.
I'm trying to picture my, yes, you know, my map in my head, and not doing a very good job.
Yes, that's great. And Egypt, it is just the border at the north of Sudan, and it is just with the Mediterranean Sea, and it's considered itself an Arabs, and we know Egypt is frauds. They are frauds, but they say we are Arabs, and sometimes they say we are frauds, and they're very proud of that. And we have also Libya. Libya and Morocco and Algeria and Tunisia, all those in Mediterranean Sea borders of North Africa, and they all claims are Arab countries, even though they are in Africa. And this is one of the problems. You see, there is so many conflicts because of Arabs and non-Arabs. Arabs, they're trying to take, to get rid of those non-Arabs, and that's why this is one of the reasons in Darfur. Because the government of Sudan trying to get rid of all those black, even are Muslims. That's not important. You have to be a Muslim and you have to be an Arab. You see, and that's what's going on right now. It's one of the tragedies of 21st century, unfortunately.
All right, 11:22 here in the wake up call, Mohammed Yahya from Sudan.
From Sudan, and from Darfur.
And
I
now
was
living
born
here
Darfur.
In Charlottesville.
Yes.
As we talk about. Darfur, Mohammed with the Demanga Coalition. Hi, Martin, also here in the studio. Students taking action now. Feel free to call up and ask some questions if you'd like. I got all kinds of stuff to keep myself and get myself straight and continue learning. But 979-0919-1877 WNRN rocks if you would like to participate. Let me take a moment and tell you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia. And the Shenandoah Valley. Rain throughout the day today, highs 45 to 50. A light rain tonight, a little mist, 40 to 45. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, highs 55 to 60. Right now, it's rain across the listening area, 48 in the valley, 50 in Lynchburg, 50 in Richmond, and just 47 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They have footwear for the season from Merrill, UGG, and others, plus clothing, including head and handwear from Patagonia, Mountain Hardware, and the North Face. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen, they're in Richmond, and at BRMS.com. I can't find the little thing I'm supposed to read. Someone in the studio has lost it. But keep listening, because WNRN and Whole Foods are giving away turkeys for the holiday season. So keep on listening, and you'll have a chance to win one soon. All right, 11:24, back on the wake-up call. I see the phone ringing. What's got Catherine out there. You know, Catherine's last week is 2 weeks from now, and Graham is out there learning so that Graham and Michael can take over for Catherine. Guys, explain to me as quickly as you can, have you had anybody meet you with opposition in your attempts to, train people to bring up genocide? Have you had anyone outside of Sudan and some of these other countries? Have you had met people in Britain or in the United States or other such who said, there's not genocide over there, let's not pay that much attention to what you're doing?
Well, I think that this occurred sometime earlier. I'm not sure if all of your audience is aware, with the U.S. not initially asserting that there was a genocide in Darfur. Recently, they came out with the peace agreement that actually declared that there was a genocide in the Darfur region. So the U.S. has come around to acknowledge that it actually is defined as a genocide. As far as in the United States goes, the Darfur issue has been a bipartisan issue. Both Sam Brownback from Kansas who's generally considered a very conservative senator, and former Joe Biden senator, both supported the peace agreement that was passed by the United States. So there is not as much political pull from people. But when we look at the some institutions such as the United Nations, we see a little more conflict. Initially, the Security Council wasn't willing to pass some resolutions to bring peacekeepers into Darfur because of the complex oil reserves that they have. Sudan has one of the large oil reserves in the world, and actually China and Russia have oil investments in Sudan. And this kind of throws a curveball into the Security Council situation.
So they're going with the majority people in control rather than the people.
Exactly. If they already have an interest.
Hang on, caller.
If they already have an interest in the oil that the Khartoum government has control of, you know, there's not much reason for them to pull out and say that, no, we want to bring peacekeepers in and pull this government out that's supporting us oil-wise.
All right, we got Paul from Charlottesville. Hey, Paul.
Good morning. I'd like to ask people you have there, when we talk about this being a Muslim country, I'm sure we're dealing with the same situation as in Iraq with the Shia against the other major group, and sort of like you have with many different sects in Christianity who beat up on one another. And my other interest is, who's supplying the arms to this government that's doing all the killing? And I'll just hang up and listen.
This is really a great question, Anaya. I want to tell you something. Here, the government of Sudan, which is claims a totally Arab government and supporting the Arab militia, which is created by this government itself, and they recruited them from neighboring countries, from some Arab countries, from Chad, from Niger, from Cameroon, from Syria, from Jordan, from even, unfortunately, some from other countries in the Middle East. Those came together to fight as a holy war, you know, this war against Muslims' brothers. It is really very interesting when you see those Janjaweed, mostly they are not from Sudan. It's very, you can see just one out of third are Sudanese, but the two third are outside of borders of Sudan, those who are Arabs, and they come to fight with Arabs' brotherhoods against those who are really even Muslims and blacks. You know, this is a racism war. And they get support financially, logistically, and they get real huge of those helps from even Arab countries.
Is that what it's all about? I mean, not what it's all about, but is that why you see those folks? Is because, you know, there are people from almost any race or color who will do evil things for money?
Yes, some of those Janjaweeds, they do this kind of job for money. They get paid by the government. And some of them, really, they come to fight as a holy war. You know, and they get a promise from the government to get them the land. This land is for you, and you have to fight for it, because it is the lands of Arabs. And we have to get rid of those black Africans, and we can get this land. Because a very interesting issue, which is just high, I mentioned it, about the oil. The oil made Sudan conflict very complicated, because more of superpowers also right now competing, as he said, China and Russia and maybe France and other big countries trying to get this oil and supporting the government of Sudan. Here, those Arabs also, they're trying to get this land. Because Darfur especially, it is one of the biggest states all over Africa, not only Sudan. And it is the two sides of France. Darfur state is the two sides of France, and it is almost maybe bigger than Texas here in the United States of America. And it is very rich land of oil. It is just described as one of the states which is flood over oil, you know. And we have animal resources. We have, you know, millions of sheep and cattle and goats and cows. And we export those fresh meat and live animals to over 29 or 30 Arab countries and even other Muslim countries, you know, by meat. That's why Darfur dominated in whole Sudan and even in Africa to export food for other countries, especially the meat. You know, this is one of the issues, the meat, animals, and we have also oil, and Darfur considered number four all over the world in gold. Can you imagine that? And in copper, copper.
Right, gold and copper.
And copper, Sudan considered number seven in around the world.
We are talking about
Darfur.
We are talking about Darfur here with Mohamed Yahya, who is a native of Darfur, currently living in Charlottesville. We have Hi Martin here. Are you a UVA student? I didn't really ask.
I am, yes.
A UVA student and a member of Students Taking Action Now. 979-0919. If you have a question like Paul, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Maybe you're listening on one of our news stations in Lexington or Harrisonburg or Lynchburg. Dial us up. I do need to take a moment and thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for their support today. Five Guys serves America standard, fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 Friday and Saturday. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. They're in the Hollymead Town Center and now on the Downtown Mall here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's FIVEguys.com. Back to Paul and his question. Mohamed, you mentioned that you have a variety of I guess outsiders coming in to Sudan to fight. But I don't know that we really answered the question about where the guns are coming from. And let's talk about that for both sides. Where are the guns coming from for both sides?
Yes, this is a very interesting question. For the government of Sudan, the guns comes from China. China is the main supporter of this government because investing in the oil in a large and taking about over 42% of the oil share in Sudan. And, trying to protect the government of Sudan because whenever this government still existed in this power, that means China will get more and more from these resources. And they getting huge of weapons. And in Darfur recently, they found out all these weapons go to Darfur, to the Janjaweed and to the government troops to attack those civilians and bomb their villages. Even the aircraft and those helicopters, machine gun ships came from China and Russia in the
same time. What about the other side?
And the other side.
What about the people who are being killed, who are being driven from their homes?
Unfortunately, those people are armless people. Civilians living in their camps, living in their villages, totally destroyed, bombed by airplanes and by helicopters, and they destroy their villages and they displace them. Right now, they are living in makeshifts. Unfortunately, under trees, makeshifts, and a few of those camps and shelters they get from aid workers who are doing really incredible job over there. And unfortunately, those rebels also, they claim that they get their weapons from the government because they really achieved victories recently against the government. Those rebels of SLA and GEM, Justice and Equality Movement, and Sudanese Liberation Army, they said, we totally depend on the weapons that we get from the government of Sudan and from the Janjaweed. Because they will never fight us so much. They just flee and they leave their trucks and leave their guns. But there is nobody get us any weapons. And some of them, they said, we get something, from what you call Chad. But that is not significant as most of people say.
And when we talk about the citizens not fighting but fleeing from the Janjaweed, we talk about them being completely disarmed. They do not have arms. They don't have the guns that the Janjaweed has. And whether the Janjaweed get that from the Chinese, which Mohammed pointed out, they largely do. They still have the resources and the money from the oil to get the guns from almost anywhere. With that resource of oil, they still have many options to get the weapons from. But the citizens are completely disarmed. This is not a gunfight. This is literally them coming in with weapons and killing the citizens that are completely disarmed.
Well, that's right.
There is a group that's there to, I don't know, save them somehow, right? The African Union?
Yes. To speak to this more generally, this goes back to the whole history of the conflict. Initially, there wasn't a UN force that wanted to be sent because of the conflicting interests between the Chinese and the Russians and possibly the French with the oil supplies. The UN did approve a resolution to send 17,000 UN peacekeeping troops to Darfur, but the African Union already had a peacekeeping force in place of 7,000, and this is of not just a shoddy put together force, but it is only 7,000 people, and they don't have the logistics support, they don't have the technology, they don't have all the support that the United Nations does.
7,000 people in a region the size of France,
of Texas, the state of Texas, of France. Yes, exactly. The African Union force is there to mediate peacekeeping, but they're working still with Khartoum, which is sponsoring the genocide. So they're not doing as much as we think a United Nations force could, and do not have the size and power that a United Nations force does.
And I read that the Sudanese president has refused currently any Western intervention. Why? I mean, okay, so there's actually privately supporting what's going on, but if you're claiming that you're the third party who wants to help but can't, wouldn't you at least say, fine, come on in? Why would you say, no, we don't want any Western intervention?
Well, I think that it's also a financial interest thing still. We have the oil and the supplies coming out, and they are the ones that are sponsoring the genocide towards Darfur, so you may not expect them to come in with open arms and be like, okay, people that may be more objective to the situation, come in and inspect our country and look at our policies and see if these are policies that are fair and just and meet the rules of international law. You don't have that right now, as it's not as prevalent with the African Union force as it might be with the United Nations force. And I think a lot of Western countries have also been, on the flip side of that coin, have been resistive to commit United Nations forces because of the recent past of Rwanda. They were a little afraid with all of that. But I there is a UN force there that is willing to help, that has been assembled of 17,000, that is willing to go in, and that has been shunned by Khartoum.
All right, hold on a second. All right. Mohammed, 11:39 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Over 30-plus years, a Free Union resident has used her psychic powers to find bodies and finger suspects with startling accuracy. Is her special talent real? This week's cover story takes a look. According to the latest statistics, Charlottesville's real estate market has definitely cooled, but has the bubble burst? And one of our guests here today, activist Mohammed Yahya, speaks about stopping the genocide in Darfur. The Hook, reminding you to always keep your receipt. And support all day, coming from the Ivy Inn, a tradition of elegant fine dining on Old Ivy Road in Charlottesville. The Ivy Inn serves dinner Monday through Saturday from 5 until 9. Reservations are recommended. More is at ivyinnrestaurant.com. And don't be going nowhere, because at noon, George Bell will be here for Les Temps Perdue. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Van Halen, no Loverboy, no Slade, but you will hear Pavement, Cocteau Twins, and Violent Femmes. And requests are always welcome. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. All right, back in action here with Mohammed Yahya and Hi Martin as we discuss what's going on in Darfur and how to improve things. You know, and that's one of the questions is, a lot of comment has always been that Britain, London, has always done lots and followed lots of what's going on, and the United States has, the media has done very little. What difference would it make if the United States media paid more attention to what's going on?
I think a lot of the news sources early on in the United States, to clarify the question a little bit, did cover Darfur when it was kind of a hot topic, when people initially realized that there was a genocide going on and the word started to get out. CNN and ABC and all the major networks did pick it up in the United States, but the BBC has maintained one of the most prevalent news sources being in Darfur and reporting from Darfur. To go back to the question, if the United States news agencies were to cover it more prevalently, obviously it would get to a lot more people, because not only United States citizens hear the news reports from the United States, almost the entire world does. And the U.S. being an economic force as it is, and a political force as it is, it being in the public spotlight here keeps a lot of pressure on Darfur and the situation going on there. So if U.S. agencies were picking it up, it would have more press and more people pressing to try to solve the situation than it does now.
It's very interesting sometimes when you see issues like celebrities, like maybe Michael Jackson or other celebrities, when something happening comes up, just you see a lot of media reports and a lot of announcements and things comes up in newspapers and all over the country, and that's around all the world when you see that. But unfortunately, you will never get that enough media covering about the issue of genocide, and especially in Darfur. I believe so many of reporters and so many of radio shows and as he said, CNN and Fox and really and NBC maybe, they did a great job, and also like Democracy Now, also TV, but it is not that enough, because so many of Americans right now, they don't know what's really going on Darfur. And even they don't know where is Darfur. They don't know where is Sudan. And this needs really more coverage, more work, and to get people involved and to tell them what's exactly going on Darfur. We're having a tour around the United States to educate people in within the communities, within synagogues and churches and universities, schools, whatever. But that's also not enough, because you got to educate the community. And this is a major thing. The civilians, Americans, they got to know that. And we need help. It is not enough just to go to speak out. We need all the reporters, we need all the news agencies, and especially the TVs, to focus in this issue, because it is genocide. Simply, it is genocide. And when it is genocide, this is becomes a moral obligation for all the human beings around the world. They have to do their right to protect the civilians in Darfur.
You know, when I was doing some homework for the topic, there was a BBC report stating that a UN investigation team said that there were war crimes being committed, but that there was no intent to commit genocide.
Yes, this is the kind of tactics they're trying to back up from, the issue of genocide, because this is responsibility. When over 500,000 of people killed in Darfur, right now, it is just from 2003 up to now, over 450 and nearly to 500,000 of people killed. And the killing is going on right now. Every single minute, kids killed, women raped and killed, and men killed. And you will never dare to go out of camp to get fair wood so as to cook for your kids. You will be raped if you are a woman, and you will be killed if you are a man. And you have to choose either of two of those things. You got to send a woman to get raped better, or you got to go as a man to be killed as a better. And otherwise, your kids will die of starvation, because they have to starve, because you don't have any electricity, no even fuel, gas, to use stoves to cook. Only option is to go to gather firewood outside of camps, and no one will protect them. African unions are there, but they are not sufficient. Only 7,000 troops. even rapes happening before their eyes, killings happening before their eyes, and murders happening before their eyes, and African unions will never do anything, unfortunately. They totally failed. And that's related me back to that question you asked, hi, and he answered, that's really great, because the peacekeepers resisted. The United Nations peacekeepers came through a resolution of the Security Council of United Nations just at the end of August 30th, Resolution 1706, to allow to send United Nations peacekeepers to take over African Unions to stop this genocide immediately. The government of Sudan resisted and refused, and they said simply because we have a sovereignty, we will never allow any invaders, we will never allow any of Western troops, because they will come and to dominate our country, and we are we having a sovereignty. How you have a sovereignty, al-Bashir government, when you came by coup? You are not come by election. Came by force and came by coup and controlled the government. And right now they're claiming that they have a consent. And you have to ask Bashir to give you permission to get the troops or deployment of peacekeepers inside Darfur. How you can ask, and I am always very really frustrated about this situation, how you can ask criminals to give you permission to go to save the people? How you can get consent from Hitler to go to save the Jews? It is impossible. They will never give it that to you, especially when the United Nations peacekeepers, they have to intervene with full mandate, Chapter 7, that is, will allow them to control the area and to protect the civilians and to make sure to even shoot at any of Janjaweed or government troops when they come to kill or to rape or to attack the camps and the civilians. And this is protection, and that's what has to be done. But unfortunately, right now, UN backing, because they need to get consent from the government of Sudan. United States of America, which is a big supporter and which is the first country ever really labeled the issue of Sudan is genocide. Right now, they're backing. Who is going to save us? Who is going to protect the civilians, those killed?
I don't know. Hi, who?
Yeah, to speak to the issue of genocide and labeling it as a genocide, the United States, the biggest economic and political force on the face of the earth, has actually labeled this a genocide, which is a huge political step in the direction of actually recognizing what's going on here. And just to speak more prominently to Mohammed's point, this is a systematic killing. This is not a sporadic killing. This is a systematic killing of a group of people by a government. And this is them walking out of refugee camps, them fleeing to Chad or fleeing in Darfur and going to refugee camps and literally walking out of the bounds of it and being shot or being raped if you're a woman. This is if this is not genocide, I mean, it's hard to define what is. This is them walking out of the place where they live and being systematically killed. And I believe that actually is the definition of genocide, systematic killing.
All right, real quick here, 11:49 here on the wake-up call with Mohammed Yahya and Hai Martin as we discuss Darfur. And we do that because of underwriters like 45Fix. .com. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to fund a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. Mohammed, you're from Sudan.
Yes.
Did you leave family behind in Darfur?
Unfortunately, I have no my personal family. I haven't get married yet, due to this war and this conflict, and only I have my family as the parents and brothers and sisters, and who only I know about two of them, my sister and brother, who are able to escape and flee out of Sudan. I don't know where is my parents up to now. I don't know where the rest of my brothers and sisters. We are nine brothers and sisters plus two of my parents, who are 11 in one family. Only I know about my two of family members, brother and sister, who are able to escape. And me, the third one. The rest of them, I don't know up to now.
Okay.
This is one of my...
Do you gentlemen, either of you, believe that the recent election changes will change any way the United States' past method of dealing with their actions at Darfur?
We would hope so. But again, this has been a bipartisan issue. Actually, one of Bush's secretary councils, Robert Zolik, was one of the main people that pushed the peace resolution for Darfur. The resolution that was supposed to handle the situation that was signed by the Sudanese government trying to resolve the situation there was backed by the Bush administration. So we hope that that will continue, along with a push from the Democratic leadership that just took control of the Senate and the House for more initiatives towards clearing up the situation in Darfur.
And I can add here, I as Darfurians, and I am a victim, and I lost my family members, and I don't know whether if they're alive or not. And this is not only the issue, because we have to protect all the people of Darfur, and those who have no any voice, those who have no anyone to protect them, we need them to protect it, either the Democrat or either the Republican. As Sudanese and as a Darfurian native here, and I'm going to be American soon, I hope all Americans come together to protect my people. I don't want this to become the issue of politics. I don't want this to become an issue of any kind of manipulations. We need those people to be protected as soon as possible, because it is killings going on right now. You know,
so it's humanitarian. It has nothing to do with who's in control or who won an election vote.
Exactly. Yeah. And we can't wait for that. People can't wait. The time is running out. And people get killed, get raped, displaced, bombed by airplanes, by helicopters, and their wealth of water resources, which is very rare. They have no forest ever. And those wells poisoned by poisons. You know, poison their wells, all the water resources, and they get killed, most of them, and even animals get killed.
Wasn't there a recent peace accord signed in the spring or the summer of this year?
Yes, that was between one of the factions, out of three factions of rebels in Darfur who are fighting with the government and Janjaweed. You know, only one faction, and that's one of the small factions. It is not even bigger factions, as some of reporters saying. Because Minni Arkawemi now, he is the leader of that small faction, which is split from SLA, the Sudanese Liberation Army. You know, and they went through the government of Sudan to sign that peace accord. And they get into Darfur. But unfortunately, that peace doesn't work. It doesn't yield any of peace, unfortunately. But instead, the war has escalated. The killings has escalated. And everything getting worse since they signed that peace in May 5th, unfortunately. You know, and still the situation is getting worse. And that's really simple. It doesn't work. And that's why, unfortunately, right now, there is so new developments happens. Some of groups, they came together. And they're fighting again because they said that is not a good deal. We have to get more demands when we sign, and we will never sign. We have to get the government of Sudan to approve our full representation in the government as Darfurians. We need to get protection fully to secure our civilians who refugees are killed, and to get them back. And we need the demand of the United Nations to come in Darfur to help to protect. It is not enough to get the Sudanese government to disarm the Janjaweed, because they failed to disarm the Janjaweed because they use them and to kill those people. And they need even the most important thing also to be compensated. Their villages destroyed, their animals looted, their money, everything they have, and they lost their life before all that. And how simple it just becomes to sign the peace without getting all those demands fully be committed. And this is one of the problems that why this was failed, this peace was failed, because most of those rebels are outside. They are not trying to sign unless they get full demands and full government concessions for other things that they wanted for Darfurians.
All right, 11:56 here on the Wake Up Call. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. You know, if you joined us late, www.sevillepodcast.com, and you can listen to the entire hour. We'll also put up the websites for these two gentlemen on the area so that you can check that out. And there's a lot of information going on the rest of this week, right? You guys are going to have several events, some music, some speaker symposiums,
right.
Raising money for Doctors Without Borders.
Yeah,
so, hi, tell us about that.
Yeah, we have speaking to awareness in the local community and trying to get the word out, which a lot of the American media hasn't done recently. We're hosting Demonga and Stand and members of the local community. Especially Maggie Murphy, who I'd like to thank very, very much, are hosting several events during this week. We're hosting tonight, we're having a concert, a benefit concert for Darfur at the CHS Performing Arts Center at Charlottesville High School, featuring Azuni Adu and Native African dance and song performances, also speeches by David Mayer Brown. Or Mayor David Brown, sorry about that. And former Mayor Reverend Albert Edwards was also supposed to speak, but unfortunately he won't be able to make it tonight. But minimum donations range from $15 to $20, and we'd love to see you out there. This is really a call to Charlottesville to try to fill the Performing Arts Center for Darfur, to let them know that we still recognize it as the issue, recognize it as something that is on our minds, and that we haven't forgot about it as a local community. Monday, our stand group, along with Demonga, is sponsoring a day, Silence for Darfur, where we'll be wearing green cloth around our mouths and not speaking all day, and handing out flyers to inform people about the situation there, let them know that it is on our minds, and just let people know what Darfur is, which is the general theme throughout the week. Tuesday, we're doing a movie at Newcomb Theater all about Darfur, explaining the history of the situation, explaining some of the intricacies of the crisis going on. That's co-sponsored with the UNICEF group on UVA grounds. Wednesday, we have a divestment general body meeting. We didn't speak much about divestment. Divestment is actually pulling investments that we have in the Sudanese government out because of their sponsorship of the genocide.
I thought that had already happened. That is not currently a law?
Yeah. Actually, it's not a law. The U.S. has not pulled its investments out of
Sudan. So Halliburton or some evil business like that can have all their money over there.
Many evil businesses can. And also, the pension funds for the United States and the states actually do have investments in Sudan, and that's actually what we're working on now. Recently at UVA, we just got UVA to divest its funds out of Sudan to pull its support out of the government away. Also, we're working on the statewide campaign where our pension fund has investments in Sudan. So we're doing a lot of work on that front. Going back to our week-long events, we have two events on Thursday night. We have a speaker symposium with David Morris, who's actually writing a book on Darfur as we speak, which is in slim supply if you look for books because the conflict is so recent. There hasn't been a lot of people that have written a lot of information on it. We also have Reverend Keith Roderick, who is the director of the Sudan campaign. And we have a few representatives from Demonga and a few other local speakers speaking there as well.
Are these things free?
Yes. All the week-long events are free except for our benefit concert tonight. And all funds from that benefit concert will go to Doctors Without Borders, directly to their work in Sudan and Darfur. The Thursday night event, the speaker symposium, is at 7 p.m. at McLeod Hall on UVA grounds. That's the nursing school. And if you need directions to that, there's maps on Virginia's website, UVA, or Demonga. Virginia.edu.
And I'm sure there's probably links from your website.
Exactly. We have one more event. We have a bar night at O'Neill's Irish Pub on the corner from 10 until 1 a.m.
That's the one I'll be at.
We'll be selling cups there, and all of those proceeds will be going either to Oxfam or Doctors Without Borders for their work in Darfur as well. And all of these events can be found on our website, uvastand.org. That's uvastand.org. And then demonga.org. Damanga.
Yes. Say D and say mango and take the O out and put A. Demonga. Demonga.
And we'll list that in the, go to SeavillePodcast.com and the paragraph that'll tell you what today's show about. We'll have the names of our guests and the websites and links for that. Guys, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
Next week, boys and girls, we'll have a show about an environmental show regarding the Chesapeake Bay. George is up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.